something that you expected to see in a home. When you came in, you looked to see where the crucifix was, and it just seemed that everybody had a crucifix or a picture of the Blessed Virgin, and you always had one in the bedroom. My grandfather, I recall, saying the rosary complete. If he didn't go to church, he stayed home and said the rosary in his room, and he taught me the prayers in Slovak. I didn't know what it meant, but I recited them with him.
Would you describe some of the work the men did? And I wanted to ask you about some of the work the women did, especially what your mother would have done while you were growing up.
Well, mother, we had chickens, and mother, that was her job to take care of the chickens and gather the eggs and feed them, and my sister and I helped her carry water up to the chickens. And of course, when we had soup on Sunday, mother killed the chicken and scalded it and pulled the feathers off of it. She made the garden and canned all the vegetables, and the cellar was full of jars. And when she made soup, why, she got the jars of what she needed. And originally she made homemade noodles, and then later it was easier to buy them. But mother also helped in the barn. She could run the milking machines, wash the cows and prepare them and give out hay, and mother had a driver's license, and she could go and buy the groceries or do the business and write the checks and then be involved in the business, go somewhere and pay the bills, the taxes, and there was always baked goods. I mean, I didn't know what it was to buy a store-bought cake. I often had seen them as a child, but I had never tasted one. I was curious about that. But we had everything we wanted to eat, and we had dairy herds, so there was plenty of milk and butter and buttermilk. And her job, she was my dad's partner as well as his wife, and she also took part in selling produce with her brother every Thursday. That was the day they went to sell what was grown on a farm. And Dad would plow and cultivate and help, but he had to look after the farm, so Mother took that responsibility. And the chickens over the years did pretty well, and Mother would always save that money that she sold the eggs from. And then if Dad needed a piece of new machinery, why, he would talk to Mother, and pretty soon it would show up.
Who chose it?
Well, Dad would choose what we needed. If we needed to replace a tractor, or we needed, like as years went by, we started out with kerosene lights in the barn, and then we got electrical power in 1944. And I remember the first year with the Christmas lights and lights in the house. We used to have gas mantles that you burned for light. We were always concerned if a moth came in the house, it went right to the lantern and knocked it out, knocked your light out. But then we needed milk coolers, milk pump, and improvements. And there was always need for more and more money. It was a business. And so Mother, you know, was there as a strong partner.
I'm interested in her having a driver's license, because I know so many women who never got driver's license. Did anyone think that she was doing something unusual?
I don't think so. In the family, I always thought that the farmers are very progressive, and the women as being partners in everything and not held back by any kind of tradition. Mother was very active as a 4-H teacher. She taught the children how to sew and how to in garden. That the children in the country had a garden, and they had a roundup where they took their vegetables and they showed them. They were graded, and they had to keep a record book. And Mother was a 4-H leader, and Dad would always say, "Well, you know, are you going to another meeting? You know, how many meetings have you had already this week?" And but she was very active in the community that way.
I was about ready to ask something, I forget what it was. Oh, I know. It was about the nine children. You said there were nine children in your family.
Yes. My wife and I, of course, she was a girl from Brackenridge Avenue, and her maiden name was Sweetek, and her mother's maiden name was Sweetek, which was a big family. Of, they worked in the mills, and she was, her dad's name was Krumenacker, and he worked in the mill too, and he was also in the union. And when we got married, Father Rice was the pastor of St. Joe's, and this was in
Father Charles Owen Rice.
Yes, and we were getting married at 1956, I believe, and it was the election year, and Eisenhower and Nixon were running, and I don't even remember who the other two were, but this was a very strong Democratic Party family. Uncle Louis was a delegate, and Louis Sweetek, and of course Father Rice was a very strong Democrat, and I went out and got a button that said Ike and Nixon, and I wore this, and Carol and I went in for religious instructions to Father Rice and walked into his study, and he looked at that and he said, "How dare you? All these pictures of Phil Murray and all these big Union people and Truman and all the people he had known, and I'm wearing an Eisenhower button."
Did you do it for fun?
Oh, I just believed, and I wasn't doing it. It's just something I felt strong about. We were all Republicans on the farm because we both believed in lower taxes, less government, and there was always a little contest between the people who made the big money in the mills, and we had to buy the tractors that cost so much because of the wages it took to make our machinery. We were on the other side of the spectrum between some of the people that, even our relations, being a farmer, we were islands of ourselves, that we were self-contained, and we had to pay the cost of all the benefits that the rest of the industry had, we felt. And Father Rice finally settled down and gave us our instructions for marriage. He married us at St. Joe's, but then nine children came along, and they were all baptized at St. Clement's. And the farm wasn't any place that, you know, a young girl growing up didn't want to be. It was always something that was interesting, and there was always plenty of activities in the school and time for it. And my wife took the girls to things at school if there was a play or an organization they wanted to be in, and there was time for everything. We made time. And my five girls, they liked the farm, but they never got involved in it like you might expect, because things were kind of changing. Mm-hmm. And you know, there were things going on in high school, and my four boys, they were interested in the farm, but there were so many other things in school that were going on, and you felt, well, maybe you should let them do what they wished rather than kind of encourage them to be here at the farm. And my father and I were here farming together, and he died in 1985, the year that my son Tom got married. And then pretty much the farm was up to me to manage, and the boys helped. The boys helped to build this house we're sitting in. We laid brick together on the outside, and it was always a learning experience. If you tore an engine down on a tractor, and the boys got involved and put the engine back together, and it's something they learned to do, and learn how to cut and weld and take care of the cattle and drive machinery and the business that goes with it. But they're not all involved with me now. My son Billy is here, and we milked the cows here this morning, and I've got another son, two sons that work for Recon Transmissions, which has nothing to do with the farm, but I taught them to be independent and independent thinkers, and they like to get into management, and so I taught them too well. Now they're independent of me.
Are they others around this area?
Yes. Maureen, my oldest daughter, who became a dental hygienist, lives in Mercer with her husband and just had a new baby. She's going to have a baby any time, and she has AJ, it's 2 years old, and they come to the farm, and he knows how to say grandpap and farm and cow, and so they live up there. And then I've got a daughter that just had a baby, and her husband is in construction, and they live out in Cranberry, Maria. And then I've got a daughter who is in business and lives here with me in Saxonburg. She owns a designer's house. That's Carolyn. And then Barbara, she lives at home here, and she's scheduled to get married this fall. And she's involved in recon in the office in accounts receivable. And along with Tom, who works there in sales, recon in Pittsburgh, and my youngest son, Jim, who works for recon, has a route in the New York state, and they work for recon. And Linda, who is my youngest daughter, lives at home here, and she had gone to college to take up video management production and went to Nashville and visited with the people who record, the Judds and others, and came back to work for a firm in Cranberry, U.S. Filter, and now she's going to school to learn Spanish because they have a lot of business with Mexico. So it just seems like you never stop learning or moving along in your life. And the farm is a good basis for teaching a little discipline and how to make your own way and be responsible for your mistakes and learn from them. And that's how we got along here on the farm. They go to church and bring back the church bulletin, and I read it. And we're doing this, or this church is doing that. My daughters have been in choir and the church they belong to, and they've always stuck to their church and their upbringing. It's affected their lives positively.
You mentioned choir, and I see the musical instruments around here. Is singing an important thing in your family?
Well, with the girls, it was when I was growing up. My sister and I played the accordion. Carl, from down in Natrona, Uncle Carl Augustine, who his wife Rose was my dad's sister, and so she was like a second cousin to me, I guess. And Uncle Carl was a teacher, and he had a large brass band of 100 members in Natrona years ago, back in the 20s, and he taught my sister and I taught us to play the accordion. And the first job we had was to play at my grandfather's tavern on the way out here from Trenum. There's Palco's Tavern.
Okay, I've heard of that.
And it has the pictures on the wall, the scenes from Slovakia that somebody has done from Trenum, and that's also done in Lipa Hall down in one of the towns, Cheswick or somewhere, the same type of scenes. And and it's very interesting. We used to play there. That's when I was 12, 14 years old. And then I played in square dance bands and polka bands, and played for a lot of weddings around here and towards Ohio and Pittsburgh. And New Year's Eve was always a big time to go out and play and make double money. So we found time for that. But music, we always enjoyed music. Even my dad even played the button accordion, and I recall as a child him playing, and you know, when there was a party, and the accordion disappeared somewhere. I wish I still had it.
They'd be your children like music too?
Yes, the girls all learned piano, played piano, and Carolyn was in a sort of a rock band, and she played the keyboard and sang for quite a few years. She used to sing at the Saxonburg Festival of the Arts in August. And she put on a little program at the park there. They enjoyed music.
What school did your children go to?
Well, this is South Butler here in Alki, and they all went to, of course, at first we lived in a rented farm for a while before we built this house here, and they went to Freeport for a while, Freeport High School, and then Maureen went to the University of Pittsburgh to learn to be a dental hygienist, and Barbara went to the school in Pittsburgh, the like the Art Institute, to take up modeling, and Linda, my youngest daughter, took up video management at the Art Institute, I believe, down there. So if they had something they wanted to do, well, we helped them do it.
How did they get their religious education when they were young?
Well, Carol would pretty much take care of that, take them down to St. Clement's, and that's where they got their education, like before they got confirmed and for communion at St. Clement's. And there would always be a gang of us, nine children, and Carol and I. Mm-hmm. And it got to where there were just two girls left to go to religious education, and Carol thought, well, is it really worthwhile? And I said, you know, Carol, there are people who only have one child and they still educate. It just was a kind of a slip. So we certainly did it, but it just, a thought came out of Carol one day. Gee, there are only two. There's two left to take to school. But we used to go to St. Clement's and take the front pew, and we were always late, and we had to go way up front, the second row, and Father Malinak would be looking right at us, and we never knew whether we were really in trouble, and you know, the children would all genuflect, and Father would say, I don't want to embarrass anybody, but I see our large family knows how to enter their pew. And
uh-huh.
So it felt good to hear that one day.
Oh, I wanted to ask you about shopping, too. Where were the places that you shopped?
For groceries?
Yeah, you told me about the feed, but I'm thinking about the ordinary, everyday thing.
Well, groceries, there was a place in Saxonburg called Marhoff's General Store, mm-hmm. and Nellie Marhoff and her family had run that since the 1800s, and Mother would go and get the groceries, and we had a freezer, and whatever she needed, she brought home and froze something that might perish, and really didn't need many groceries, cereal, mm-hmm. you know, Mother made kasha. You know, well, it's like farina, mm-hmm. grain that you would make up, and there was always bacon and eggs, and we always had all our own meat, mm-hmm. and we had a freezer right away from the 40s to keep to freeze. We would butcher a cow or a couple of pigs, and Mother would wrap them and put them in the freezer. So the only thing we needed was like coffee and flour, and we didn't buy a lot of groceries because we had the grocery store growing around us. The garden went all summer long, and all the beets and the carrots were canned, and beans, and everything was there. We were self-sufficient.
What did you do before you got that freezer when you butchered a cow or a pig?
We used to can meat in jars. It was boiled, and then it was sealed in jars. And if we butchered, Grandfather knew how to butcher. We would kill a pig and scald it and take the hair off of it, and that would be Dad and Paul Schubick, the hired man. And then Granddad would cut the pig up on the table in the shed, and he would preserve it with a cure, and cut the hams up and hang them up in a smokehouse, build a smoke build a fire with apple or sassafras and smoke them and then hang them up. And then they would stay that way and through into the winter. We'd butcher in the fall, and then we'd have it pretty well used up by spring. And of course, fresh meat, you always had a chicken to kill, and you had your eggs. And before the freezer, even eggs, there was a process where you could preserve eggs in a solution. But the eggs were fresh every day. The groceries weren't a big thing. Just the basics.
What about things like clothing and anything for the house?
Well, clothes. Every Saturday night we would go to Butler to shop for clothes, and that would be the night we would go see a movie and shop in Butler for clothes at the stores on Main Street. In Butler, you'd buy shoes and your work clothes, or if you really wanted a good suit, why, I think Dad always had a tailor-made suit. Or go to Kaufman's in Pittsburgh for a better suit. You know, if you wanted to be well-dressed in church, never thought of wearing play clothes to church. I recall wearing a sport jacket to getting ready to go to church, and Dad insisted I take it off and put my suit on. It wasn't suitable for church.
Happy people go. Don't think about what they might wear when they get there.
Right.
What about doctors? Did you ever have to go to doctors?
Well, there was doctor in Saxonburg and a dentist, and the doctors in Trenum were probably where you went, like as a child. Went to a doctor in Trenum to get my tonsils removed, and
did you have to go to the hospital for that?
No, removed them in the doctor's office. And but we had Dr. Moore in Saxonburg that we used to go to as a dentist as a child, and for $2 he pulled a tooth, and if you needed filling it was $3. That was before Novocaine. And he had a drill that I recall that was it ran with a lot of pulleys, and he had a foot pedal that he would speed that drill up and would rattle around in your tooth. And that was no fun at all. And he had a son that became an oral surgeon in Pittsburgh, Dr. Moore, on the Main Street in Saxonburg with our dentist.
Where, now you had two sisters. Were you and your two sisters born here, or did your mother go to the hospital?
I believe Mary Ann and I were born here. My sister's a year older than me, and then Shirley, I'm not sure, I think she may have been born in the hospital.
Mm-hmm. What about your own children?
They were all born in the valley, and that was, you know, a little more child care. We always went to Dr. Lace with the children, who was in Natrona Heights, and Carol always, looked after the children, got their shots, and I recall her telling me one day she took Eddie and Maureen for a shot, and Maureen got her shot, and Eddie started to cry because he didn't get a shot, so they, and children, it was very strange, and I recall another time her going to Dr. Lace with the three of the kids, and she always dressed them well, and because we were farmers and we had a reputation to keep up, and the young woman that was there took her two children and left. And she came back with them, and they were all washed up and dressed, and she said she just felt embarrassed that her children, she had just brought them in with their play clothes, and she went home and dressed them and brought them back.
What do you mean you had a reputation to keep up?
Well, I always thought farmers were a little more aware of what's going on in the world. They were responsible for their own lives. They worked for themselves, and I always had a high opinion of people from the country. They were very competent and self-assured, not to say that other people weren't, but I always thought that we were closer to, we had God's work in front of us. The seasons rolled around, we saw the animals being born, and we were feeding the people and doing God's work, I always had a high opinion of my profession. Not everybody shared that, I'm sure, but it's something that I just assumed the way things worked. That's the way it appeared to me.
So you wanted to reflect that in your dress and the way you spoke and dressed?
Right.
When World War II, during World War II, were you old enough to be considered for the draft? Or how was your family?
World War II, my cousins, the Carlos, there were three boys who went to the Army, Rudy and Martin and Johnny. And I recall getting back these little black photo letters that would have places erased, you know, by the inset, by the censors, or where they might be, or what groups they were with. And my cousins fighting, they were older than I was. I think when 1945, I would have been 11 years old when the war was over. But I recall the newspaper accounts of the war, and the part of my cousin not coming back from the war, Rudy. It really affected me for a long time.
Boy. How did your family, when he just came back, and how did your family at a different time when they were dead? You talked about, I think, your grandmother being laid out here in the farmhouse.
Yes.
Did you continue that?
No, that never happened anymore. It was kind of progress. Went to Bacha's in Natrona, is the place where the funerals were, and as far as the Second World War, it was a time that you were aware that we had, of course, a radio every day about the activities of the war, and there was rationing. We couldn't get gasoline. We had a certain allotment of gasoline for the farm to run the tractors, and I was rationing for tires, and you had to have a coupon to get a tire, and you had to go to the ration board and argue that you needed more gasoline to get your crop planted, and many of the farm boys that were eligible for the war were exempted, had deferments, and there was a local draft board that reviewed you had to have so many chickens and so many cows to qualify for a deferment, and otherwise you were drafted, because farming was an industry that had to be continued to support the country. And I also remember Aunt Mary and Aunt Anna, who was my cousin mother, that was a good the boys that my cousins that used to come to the farm, that they worked in the not in the mill but in the glass house at PPG during the Second World War, and they would go and work because there weren't enough men to keep the glass plant going, and they used to come out to the farm and bring us their white gloves that they wore. So we used them when we were handling bales of hay. And we always talk about how things were going, and the shifts they worked in the Pittsburgh place.
Did you ever want to do that kind of work?
No, I really never was interested in doing it. It was just the farm was so much more of something I wanted to do. We had a sawmill on the farm, and Dad had the thrashing machine, and we always had new equipment. When the balers came out, and self-propelled combines, we had one of those. And it was always interesting as a child to, we had horses, and Granddad would work the team, and then when we got a tractor, why, I got to drive the tractor, and it couldn't be anything more exciting. And as far as earning money on the farm, you always had everything you needed, and we had a fairly new car, and it just wasn't a situation that you thought you were locked into or you wanted to do something else. To me, the mill was boring to do the same repetitive thing. My Uncle Rudy said that you could train a chimpanzee to do most of the work that was done in the mill. Mm-hmm. And so I never really wanted to do anything else.
What about, was your family affected by Korea or Vietnam?
No. I was interested in knowing what was happening in the government, and as far as having any family involved, we didn't have anybody that I knew of personally in the Korean War, the Vietnam War, that you know, that was a concern to the family. Those wars in those days, it was, you know, a concern because we were involved, but personally we didn't really have anything to impact on us.
You talked a little bit about the depression. Are there other local or national events that affected your family?
Well, during the depression, it was my father and my grandfather here working, and as a child, I was aware that there were people without work. I never knew of anybody that was hungry. It was just you made your way as the best you could as far as national events.